Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Along with our mountains and lakes, New Hampshire tourism promotions often present images of quaint towns, complete with white-steepled church, manicured town green, and old-fashioned general store at the heart. But in today's hyper-competitive retail economy, many of the state's traditional general stores have closed. And those that survive say it's because they've had to become more than just somewhere to pick up milk, offering both products and atmosphere that you won't find anywhere else. Today in The Exchange, 21st Century General Stores. Let's hear from you. Tell us about your town's general store or the one it used to have. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or call in 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio for the hour is Rick Broussard, editor of New Hampshire Magazine. Rick, it's always nice to see you. Welcome back.
It's always nice to see you and be here.
And we will talk with a couple store owners and managers later on in the program and get their personal perspective on the ground on this topic. What role, Rick, did general stores used to play here in New Hampshire? Seems like every town used to have one.
Yeah, they were essential. They were basically just a supply depot for the town. I mean, it was a place where you would go and get the stuff. But, you know, they were run by people, and so they had human relations. And actually, general stores were a little bit like ersatz banks. They had to provide stuff for people. I mean, everybody's seen this trope on television where, you know, put it on my tab. But that was because the farmers would get seed from the general store, or the general store would tide them over through a hard time. So they became really more than just a store. They became a part of the organic community, kind of like a heart. You know, in a lot of ways, that's what the general store was for a town. It was a nerve center. It was a place where you'd go and find comfort, find gossip, find a supply. So they were all things to all people in that town, and that made them essential. So they were essential. They've always been essential, and they might have represented a family at one time, but they grew to where they began to represent the town. People would think about the Canterbury store or the Hopkinton store or whatever. Before that, they were usually named after the person who ran them. But so it's funny how that sense of identity shifted from a family to a community, but it still played the same role, being kind of a living, breathing presence in the community.
Well, it's interesting. So not just a place to get things, but also to trade things and even a bank. I mean, that's really interesting.
Well, also, if you think about it, they were sort of like journalism in a way. They were the generalists for the community. They had to know a little bit about everything. And to this day, the bulletin board out front of a community store, a town store, is usually the best place to get the sense of what's going on in that town. There'd be anything from lost cats to, yoga lessons at the town hall to where the political rallies were being. Some of them may be a week or two old, but, you can those flapping papers outside of the community, the general store, really tell you everything you need to know about a town usually.
It's almost like they functioned as an early, early, early version of a community Facebook page.
Yes, right, a bulletin board. That's how the concept was born, and that shows you that kind of interplay that the community had, because you always knew it was a place where you could go and you could tell the store owner something if you wanted to make sure that news was spread to somebody else, because you know that everybody would go there and eventually would collect it. So yeah, it was an essential part of the, I guess, really the brain, heart circulation of a community. Life. It was a sign of life of a community to have a
social and economic life.
Yep.
So when did they start to struggle, Rick?
Well, I think, you know, we traveled in Nova Scotia some time ago, and we stopped at a lot of general stores. And up there, the general stores are all specialized. I mean, if you can get bread and milk at all of them, but if you want your hardware, you have to know which general store has that. And that's because Nova Scotia is a little bit like America 50 years ago. And what I think happened was people started expecting everything. When you go someplace now, you expect to be able to get, you know, cigarettes, lottery tickets, and, you know, health supplies, and a fresh baked muffin, and, you know, down the list. And it became a lot more challenging to run these places. So you weren't just a seed and needs store that happened to have a few necessaries. You had to literally have everything, or else you weren't considered, you know, you weren't doing your job. So I think that was a lot of it, is just the fact that we demanded too much, and they had to figure out how to do that. They've been doing pretty well, you know, in terms of becoming a place where all your needs can be met in the modern world, just as they were once all met in a more primitive world. So,
well, and we're going to talk about that because it's really interesting. Despite the struggles, we do see instances of revival. So we're definitely going to look at that today. I also want to remind our listeners, Rick, that I'd love to hear people's stories about the general store that was in your town. Maybe it closed. Maybe there were reasons for that. Maybe there's a general store or village store in your town that is looking at revival or that is doing quite well. Again, your stories are really welcome. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, nhpr.org. John sent us an email. He says he visits the Danbury Country Store every day on the way to work. John, thank you. I have been to that store many times, including as a kid buying penny candy, which I'm not sure if they still have. But I want to pick up on what John says. Every day on the way to work, we have become more of a commuter society.
Yeah.
So these stores might not function so much, some of them, as community gathering places, at least not during the daytime. But some of them have become important to commuters. You know, stop by, pick up the muffin, pick up the coffee, and get back in the car.
Well, most of them are on places that were on the original, you know, the stagecoach lines.
So that helps.
And so, and as transportation changed, I mean, the answer to your previous question is what happened to the general stores is transportation happened, and people no longer just walked or took the horse down to, you know, to the store. And so they had to deal with that sort of pass-by traffic. They had to lure people off the road to stay in business. And that's where the charm effect sort of moved into general stores. Not all general stores are charming. Not all have to be. But the ones that are surviving today and are thriving and not simply providing, you know, lottery tickets and milk are doing interesting things with their atmosphere. And they're accommodating people either on that hasty level, I got to pick something up and go, or I want to take a break and I want to relax somewhere and soak in the ambiance of this town. I'm not sure that any store does all of those things well, but some try.
Well, and you're speaking to the importance of finding a niche. And maybe a little bit later, Rick, we'll talk about how general stores sort of navigate this line of, are we a general store for ambience and, you know, hanging out? Are we a convenience store if
right.
people do want to pick up something really quick? So we'll talk about that in just a moment. I want to bring another voice into our conversation, though, Rick. Sean Geary is with us on the line. He's a Hopkinton resident and property investor who just recently purchased the Cracker Barrel in Central Hopkinton, which, by the way, was built in 1790. Wow, Sean, congratulations. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
So why did you decide to do this?
I felt, you know, the town wanted better. I think the town really had that yearning for someone to step in, take this huge project on, and sort of revive it and sort of make it that community center that the general store once was back in the 1800s. The plan was never really to own a general store. I really wasn't looking for another job, but every time I drove past, I just saw the potential that was there, and I felt, you know what, why not? Let's try it.
And I read a couple articles about your, you know, your project, and it did seem like you were sort of reluctant, but it just kept calling to you. I mean, what was the call about, Sean?
It probably falls back to my love of history, old buildings, and business, and the general store, that hit on all three. And I first looked at it maybe three years ago when it was for sale. I couldn't convince my wife to even go with me to look at it. She thought I was a little nuts to even consider it. But I looked at it for maybe two more times until time that I actually purchased it. And every time I went in, it just sort of spoke to me that, you know what, there's so much potential here. We have some young, fresh, great ideas to plug into the store itself, and just being able to renovate it and rehab it was something that I was looking forward to doing.
Well, speaking of ideas, I understand you reached out to Hopkinton residents and said, hey, tell me what you want. This is on, for those who don't know, the Cracker Barrel. First of all, it's not related to the national chain. Let's just get that out there. But it's right on, you know, the main drag there in Hopkinton. Hopkinton is sort of a commuter community. So what did Hopkinton folks tell you they'd like to see?
The response that I got on Facebook was pretty impressive. A lot of it hit on the same ideas that my wife and I thought we would put into the store and you know, have it do well. A lot of people are really just looking for locally sourced goods, and that was the root of the country store back in the 1800s, and the store currently sort of got away from that a little bit. Recently, we brought in Kentucky Creamery, brought in some local breads. Brothers Donuts has been a fantastic addition to the store and has done tremendously well. We have local eggs, local makeup maple syrup and cider, but we just want, people want locally sourced goods and sort of a place to just go hang out and, you know, and talk with their neighbors and friends.
So for the local vores who really want to support local farms, local food producers, you're going to provide those products, including what you said, Sean, Brothers Donuts. So from what I understand, that's a super popular donut made somewhat locally, and you decided, okay, this is a hit.
It's been a tremendous hit. Yeah, they're made in Franklin, and before we brought them in, I actually never even heard of Brothers Donuts, and I asked a couple of people, you know, who provides the best donuts in the state, because that could be a great staple in the general store, and Brothers Donuts kept coming up, so I just reached out to them finally and said, hey, what do you guys think about supplying donuts to the general store? And at first, they were a little hesitant. I would have to go down to Bow each day to pick up a dozen and bring them back to the store and sell them, but then, I mean, a week later, we were up to 10 dozen. So if I can sort of replicate that and find local little products like that that can do well, that the town and citizens will come out for, then I think we should do pretty well.
When you looked at the history of this store, over its many owners, Sean, what did you learn from that? Especially, were there mistakes made that you did not want to repeat?
I think the biggest mistake that I found was Mr. Town, who owned the building back, actually it was 200 years ago, back in 1816. He ended up selling it to two Boston merchants. He died in 1819 penniless, with his body being attached for debt by his creditors.
Wow. That's pretty sad.
It's pretty sad and absolutely fascinating to me. But, yeah, it just makes me wonder, you know, what happened with that body? Did the creditors hold it? And, you know, maybe his family had to pay ransom to get it back. It's just those little nuggets of history that are encompassed in that store just really fascinate me. And there's I mean, like you were saying, the store's been there since 1790, which would potentially make it one of the oldest continuously running general stores in the country.
Do you have any experience, Sean, in the retail or food sectors?
Absolutely not. All my experience, I started out in law enforcement, did that in 7 years, mainly in Florida, then became a stay-at-home dad. And during that time, I just really learned, studied real estate investing. Primarily, we own rental units, but this was just we were looking to expand into different businesses, and this one, with me being a local resident, it's only 5 minutes away, which makes it really convenient.
Right,
and like that's, I was handy. Saying, there's just a lot of potential there.
What innovations are you planning to use, Sean, to draw people to the store? You mentioned the specialty donuts. You mentioned the local food. What other sort of innovations are you going to try?
We're really, like, since we have no essentially retail experience, we're just going to make it really a collaborative community effort to see what people want. We'll try essentially everything and see what sticks, see what doesn't, and then ideally, I mean, we just hope that the recommendations we get, people really will come out for and actually buy to keep us going and sustainable. But as far as, yeah, really having a solid idea, that's why I reached out to the local community to see what they want to see in the store and what they'll come out for and buy. But, yeah, as far as trying specific ideas, I'm not going to say winging it, but We're just putting some feelers out.
Okay. Well, Sean, good luck.
Thanks.
Really appreciate you being with us. And I want to let listeners know that you can see a picture of the Cracker Barrel on our Instagram, NHPR Exchange, and also on our web post, nhpr.org/exchange. So folks can check out the building there. Sean, it was good to talk to you. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
That's Sean Geary, Hopkinton resident, property investor, who, as we heard, just recently purchased the Cracker Barrel in central Hopkinton. And again, we're taking your stories, questions, comments about the general store, the village store in your town, and the one that used to be, if your town does not have a general store anymore. The number 1-800-892-6477. And Rick Broussard, Dan is calling from Canaan. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome. Okay. I guess Dan is not there. What did you think about what we heard from Sean, just kind of trying something new with that old Cracker Barrel?
Well, first of all, I think he's well prepared with a experience in law enforcement and parenting, because it probably has something to do with running a good community store. You got to keep tabs of everything, and also with a paternal attitude toward it. And but I love what he said about how the reason that he did it was because the town was yearning for this. And I do think that a town minus its general store has a huge hole in it, and people know that, and the local people yearn. Whether it's a commuter thing to get a donut on the – even if you don't stop at the general store, you want there to be one there, because you know that that's like having the lights on. You know, it's your – it's the pilot light of your town, and if it's out, you feel like there's something wrong. And
that's a really good way to put it, that having a vibrant general store lets you know that your town – has the lights on.
Yeah, right. And the warmth and a soul. You know, there's a person there who you identify with that store. And all of those things are, I that's what small town life is about. It's personal. You know, you can get pretty cool in a city, and you can have a bodega where you go and you get, you know, something. But for a community, every place matters. Every institution in it matters, and this is such a crucial one. You know, another thing that was occurring to me is he was talking about how he was coming up with a business model, and it's the general store has been ripped off for its business model by every business out there. It really is sort of like the seed of commerce and enterprise, and so, you know, personal attention, local products, variety, you know, being open at the right times, all of these things, those were the requirements of the general store, and they've been splintered off into specialty organizations, specialty stores that try to provide things cheap or quick or, you know, convenient. They were the original convenience stores, and the convenience store now is not the general store, but it's basically stole their, you know, their thing.
How do general stores compete with convenience stores, Dollar General, Family Dollar, which all have kind of a similar model without the sort of hometown feel, obviously?
Yeah, well, I think Sean's on it, because the dollar store, there are a lot of dollar stores out there, and there seem to be more all the time. And there probably are less general stores, but a dollar store will never, I think I can say safely, will never be the heart of a community. You know, it may be the only place you can buy stuff, which would be sad, but it will never take that same role, because it's branded and it's staffed and all by somebody in California or in New York or maybe some other country, you know. And that local feel only really derives from having a local market. So.
And Rick, let's go back to our listeners. And Dan has called back from Canaan. So Dan, are you there? Go ahead.
I am, and the poor cell service in Canaan, so I hope I don't lose you again.
Okay, no problem. Go ahead, Dan.
So I am that gentleman who grew up in Canaan and decided to purchase our local general store. My wife and I purchased the local store that I grew up buying my penny candy at, 5 minutes down the road from where I live. So your last caller from Hopkinton, or person you speak with from Hopkinton, a lot of similarities in his story in a way, but a lot of differences as well.
What are the differences, Dan?
I guess differences are, you know, I'm not a real estate investor. I've lived here, you know, my whole life. I've raised families here, and I have another business here that I've had for the best year of 20 years. And I think, you know, another difference is possibly, and I'm not sure with Hopkinton's situation, but I know here in Canaan, you know, we've recently, in the last half a dozen years, we've got a Dollar General on one end of town and a Family Dollar on the other. And our little general store was kind of stuck in between that.
So it closed down, Dan, right? So your general store.
So we ended up not, we decided that that wasn't the game for us. And largely in part because a general store is not what it used to be. We really were hoping to bring that community atmosphere back. We, you know, we had a round table there where all the guys could get together over coffee in the morning. And I think in a small town like Canaan, you know, this particular store had always been very well known for being the local deer registration station. You get your hunting licenses there. We had a decent fishing section. We sold live bait, registered ATV and snowmobiles. We had a propane section. I think really in today's world, the general store has to offer as many of these different varieties of services they can that you can't necessarily get at your Dollar General or Family Dollar.
Right.
And it's just hard to do because there's not a lot of profit there.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for calling in. Rick, what do you think? It's tough. It doesn't always have a happy ending.
Yeah. No, you can see the strain that would be on a person trying to, you know, be in the between two places that are designed essentially to sell you stuff for cheap and then try to find a niche in there. But hey, more power to you for doing that. I'm with you there, Dan. This is why I think a lot of people move into this business, though, is because they really want to compete against that. I mean, I think it's a mission for a lot of people, and it sounds like it is for him. We're trying to preserve something that's important. It isn't frivolous, this heart of the community and this these innovative ways of bringing the store back or making it relevant or whatever in the current age are all good, and hopefully they'll work.
Do you have any sense, Rick, how many of these stores have closed? I mean, not exact numbers, of course, but is it a lot? Is it a little? Because, you know, I get around New Hampshire a fair bit, especially in the summer, and it does seem to me that I see a lot of empty general store buildings.
Yeah, I don't have a count on it, but I get that impression also. But it what's really inspiring are the ones that reopen. And sometimes they've been closed for a while. And just like Dan, somebody comes in and says, this can't stand, we have to do this. And I think that the models exist now for that to happen. I think that increasingly they know how to make it work.
We will talk about that in just a moment. That's a great segue to our next topic, sort of what some of the models are that are working with these old general stores. And we'll keep taking your calls, Dan. Thank you for that one. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. More on general stores and different models, including some who are going the nonprofit route. We'll find out more. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Keep NHPR in the loop. If you're a sustainer and you've received a new credit card, take a moment to update your payment information. Better yet, switch your sustainer payments to your checking account so you never have to update expired or replaced cards again. Giving as a sustainer for just $10 or $15 a month is the easiest and most powerful way to support the station that keeps New Hampshire connected. Update your information easily at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the past role of New Hampshire's general stores and why some Granite Staters say these stores should be a part of our present and our future. Tell us about the general store or the village store in your town, or if your general store closed, what happened? Also, what do you think? Are these classic businesses still relevant, or is it just nostalgia that makes some people think so? Let's get your opinion. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Rick Broussard is with me, editor of New Hampshire Magazine. And we've also been hearing from people who own or run stores. We heard earlier from a young man who just recently bought the Cracker Barrel in Hopkinton and hopes to bring that store back to life. Rick, I'd love to ask you this. Who is buying these stores or running them today? Because it seems like a real mixed group of people.
Well, obviously it's people either with an inherent desire for that kind of trade, or it's people who are idealists, because there is an idealistic quality to this. And a lot of times they are coming in from elsewhere, which is true of New Hampshire generally. I mean, we're not a native state anymore. More than half our population, more than half, is from somewhere else. A great example is the Squam Lake Marketplace was purchased by, I think, a couple of women from California. But boy, it is when they moved in, they went whole hog. It's a general store with a chandelier. And
never heard of that.
Best cookies you can get anywhere, you know, great food from their deli. So they came in with this vision and they saw this potential. So I think that kind of attraction, if people want to move to a place like New Hampshire, you think, well, what will I do there? Well, I'll start a bed and breakfast, or I'll open a general store. So that's to some extent the salvation of this. People see this as opportunity to embed themselves, to become part of a community that is tight, and to become an integral part of it. So I think that's the lure, is that sense of belonging. That's why the general store is important. You know that this is our town, it's alive, we belong here. Boy, if you want to move in and become a person in a store and in a community, buy a general store.
Well, and it's kind of like you said earlier, a general store is a sign that the lights are on.
Right.
In this particular community. And we've talked a lot on this program, Rick, about New Hampshire's shifting demographics. Okay, we all know we're an older state. But the other demographic trend that interests me is that our cities seem to be doing pretty well.
Yeah.
There are exceptions, but, you know, people moving in, housing being built, lots of jobs in places like Nashua, Manchester, Concord, Portsmouth. So at the same time, small towns are said to be losing population. So how does the general store sort of fit into that narrative?
And what kind of population are they retaining, or are they drawing? And a lot of times it is people moving there to retire, or to have a pretty place in the woods. And so it's kind of almost like a gentrification of the country, you know, and that's what transforms a lot of these stores into what they are and into what they find functional. Because even if you have a small population and you are the third place, you're the place where everybody goes to hang out, you can make a living. It's like a coffee house. How do you make a living selling coffee? Well, you become the place to go. And
sit and have your coffee,
right,
and buy a couple other things while you're there. France has cafes and Britain has pubs, and America used to have general stores.
Right. And now we have the Nouveau General Store, which might have Wi-Fi, might have sofas. It probably has not just coffee. It probably does not have a pot of coffee on a burner. Let's put it that way. It probably has a variety of coffees for you, and it probably has fresh baked goods by a local person. And all of this is information that you can use in your own life.
All right. And like those donuts we heard about
earlier.
Let's take some calls, Rick. Lots of people who want to talk about their general stores in their towns. So let's go first to Tamworth, where Andrea is on the line. Hi, Andrea. You're on the air. Welcome. Go ahead.
Wow. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, folks?
Go ahead, Andrea.
Well, we have a lovely store in Tamworth. It's called The Other Store. And the reason but that name is because many years ago we also had a grocery store, Remix, and that fell away because of the bigger commercial chain. And so in the end, we were sort of the last store standing, and we have become the hardware store, the grocery store, the cafe, and the place where people come to be part of the community is vital. Town.
And do you work there, Andrea?
Oh, I have off and on for 15 years.
Right. So what's the key to success? What do you think?
Well, a lot of hard work, a lot of vision, a lot of talking to people and finding out what they need and what they want. And, people realize that, our little towns are becoming something of the past. And it's really vital to this town that we have places to go where people can pick up groceries and they don't have to drive a half an hour to get milk and eggs. And we have local products. We really really support the local farmers.
Okay, kind of like Sean told us in Hopkinton. Andrea, it's good to hear from you and good to hear a success story. And I love the name of the store, The Other Store, instead of Fred's General Store or, you know, such and such Village General Store. Thanks a lot for the call, Andrea. And Rick, let's take another one. This is Justin in Dunbarton. Hi, Justin. You're on the air. Welcome.
How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
So we just opened up a small cafe in Dunbarton. And the reason why we did that was the sense of community was there, but it wasn't present all the time. And I think what I'm hearing on the radio is that sense of community is a large proponent in towns, in small towns. And when we opened up that cafe, that's all I see.
Wow. When did you open it up, Justin?
Locally.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. When did you open it up?
February 21st.
Hmm. Oh, like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Wow, because I go to Dunbarton, you know, a fair bit. I mean, I live in Concord, so if I go to Clough State Park, I drive through Dunbarton and go there occasionally. So I was not aware that you had done that.
Yeah, it's in a big yellow house in the town common. But what I like about it most is you see familiar and unfamiliar faces, but no one has their phone on. Everyone's talking, and it's like turning back the clock.
Wow.
And it's like that sense of community that you want. That's why people go to these small towns.
You know, I'm interested that you're in Dunbarton because you're so close to Concord. How do you sort of work with that? I mean, if people need groceries, they're probably going to go grocery shopping in Concord. So what do you hope to offer that's different?
We offer, obviously, everything locally as much as we can, from everything from our custom coffee, our brewed coffee, which was from Manchester, to as much of our bakery goods as we can, just to source as much local as possible, because I think that's the whole flavor that makes everything that much better.
Wow. So here's your chance, Justin.
Really order it.
Yeah.
What's that?
What's the name of the store?
MG's Farmhouse Cafe.
Okay. And is it open, up and running, or coming soon?
It's open, up and running every day from 7 to 2.
Okay. Wow. Well, congratulations. And I did not know this, Rick. I live in Concord. I try and keep up with what's happening in the Concord area, but that's interesting.
I'm going to go check it out. You know, but it's funny. He kind of went right to the third place approach. That's not exactly a general store, but it takes by the way, the general store also did, develop this concept of the third place. Once upon a time, probably only men got to use the third place for any length of time, and there was a wood stove and where you could spit and tell jokes, and you know that was the place you would hang out. They didn't have Wi-Fi, you didn't need it. Everybody knew what was going on, and they would share the information right there. But that sort of comfort zone in a store, you can break that out, and you can create. Actually, we did a story on this recently. Places that we call feel-good places, and this is a model that other retail and other service organizations are developing. When you come here, make yourself at home, feel comfy, you know, settle in and enjoy the Wi-Fi and a cup of coffee. No expectations, kind of the way that, you know, I think Starbucks and some of these international places have developed the same idea. You should feel like it's a home away from home. And some places like Apotheca and Goffstown and such are developing that to where it's a real art. I mean, it's not just a place to sit. It's a beautiful place to sit with atmosphere and scents and music and things to do and things to buy. But it's almost like an afterthought. It's a store. It's really just a cool place to go. So it sounds like he's taking that idea and using it in Dunbarton, which I know can really use it. The only place I remember like this in Dunbarton was there was a little market down the road, and and had a breakfast counter, and that's where all the people would get together in the morning to talk about politics.
Right.
So good for
you. Well, I'm glad we're doing this show today because we've already heard from people who are literally just getting these things up and running. Sean in Hopkinton, Justin in Dunbarton. I mean, this is just this year. These old buildings, these venerable institutions are being revived by another generation.
Yeah, and it may just reflect the need that people have to interact with one another. And I mean, to get off of their devices and to have some meaningful encounters that aren't digital. And you can bring your iPhone with you, you know. But it does seem like that's the desire that is currently being met. It's no longer feeds, needs, and nails. Now it's human contact.
Feeds, needs, and nails.
Yeah.
That's the old general store.
Yeah.
Let's take another call, Rick. And Amber's calling from Hooksett. Hi, Amber. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, Amber.
So I have a country store in Hooksett, and I would like to share a little bit of my story with your callers today.
Amber, go ahead. You're welcome to do so.
Oh, thank you. So Roby's Country Store has been around since 1827. It's had quite a few owners since the original owners, the Roby family. And we took it over. My husband and I took it over 3 years ago, and it had been closed for a year and a half. And we heard about it actually on NHPR that was they were looking for a new owner to take it over. So we came down and looked at it, peered in the window, and we were like, wow, this place is really cool. It's really been awesome. We have a cafe and we have a catering company in the building, but we did keep most of the feel of the inside a country store. We have a lot of New Hampshire made products, and we have a lot of really, really, really nice people that come in that we're just dying for the store to be open. It's just a great community place. You know, we don't have a cappuccino machine. We don't have like fancy couches. It's a country store. And people like that.
A country store with a venerable political history, right, Amber? There's lots of pictures and, you know, signed newspaper articles and so forth about all the political candidates that have come to Roby's over the years.
Yes. Yep. It's definitely a political stop. We had quite a few candidates for the last run. Some are just calling again right now to do a couple little visits. But, lots of stuff to look at, lots of political things to look at. It's definitely a spot for, you know, the older crowd to come have a cup of coffee and talk politics. But it's also there's a lot of, you know, younger people, a lot of families that, you know, find us every day. And they're like, this is so cool because there aren't very many cool places left, really.
Do you still, again, the name of the business is Roots Cafe and Catering Company at Roby's General Store. So do people sometimes stop in, Amber, and say, I'm here to pick up some bread and milk. Where can I get it?
Yeah, and we do have those things. So we don't set up like a grocery store, but we do use all of those things all the time. So we always have those things here, especially people that walk across the bridge and they just want a gallon of milk. We always have those things. So sometimes it's just like an ask type of thing. But, we have pretty much all the staples you'd need if you need them. You know, I'll give you some eggs. I'll give you some milk. We have butter. We have all that stuff. I mean, other than that, then you could just sit down and have a nice meal and then you don't need the milk and you won't need the eggs.
Well, and your mother, Jane Bolio, emailed us, Amber, talking about. So I won't read the whole email since you're on the air with us now, but one thing that your mother says is, my daughter, Amber, and her husband run a busy business, and she loves being part of the community. They work 70 hours a week, and they love it.
Oh,
are you working
yeah.
70 hours a week, Amber?
I would say probably, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, we get here at about 5, we leave at about 4 every day but Monday, and then we do catering. So I would say, I mean, it is definitely a lot of work. I mean, we don't do it ourselves. We have about 10 staff that, you know, that fill in weekends and do catering for us. And but, you know, you have to have a passion for it. I mean, it's not for everybody. And, you know, I would suggest anyone thinking about doing, you know, opening, a restaurant at least in a country store or not in a country store. It doesn't do itself and you can't hire everyone to do the work,
but get ready to do some hard work.
You know, if you have a great spot, people will come. And if you have great food, people will come. So if you have a mix, it'll work.
Well, Amber, I know you're probably still making breakfast there, so I will let you go. I really appreciate you calling in. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great day.
And by the way, Rick, I think March's New Hampshire Magazine Roots, Amber's Cafe, was featured for the Reuben sandwich. Is that correct?
Yeah, they make great sandwiches. In fact, Amber and her husband used to run a place called Jewel and the Beanstalk, which was like the go-to breakfast place for a long time and still is famous for that. So, yeah, she brought a lot of skills to that. And she brought them to a place that has been I mean, that's probably the classic story of a country store that has closed and reopened and closed and reopened, and they won't let it die because how can you? It has this great history. It's really beautiful. It's prominent. You can see it as you drive by if you take River Road or if you take Route 3A. And
it's worth it just for the pictures
and it's worth
of all these presidential candidates.
It's worth it just to visit and sort of soak up some history, political history.
You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. So Rick Alex sent us an email. He says, I recently moved to Bennington. It's the smallest town I've ever lived in, and it was that quaint small town feel that I was attracted to when I was looking for a home. Alex says, our country store is like the equivalent of the British or Irish pub. The community congregates there. It's where we go for coffee and snack or to hear the most recent town news or meet my neighbors. I love that store, and I'm happier in my town than I think I ever would be if it wasn't there. That gets to what you've been saying. It's not just about the coffee.
Right.
It's about the importance of having that happy third space. So I'd love your thoughts on Alex's email.
Yeah, there are elements that are needed for a town. I mean, I used to cover the town of Bow for a little newspaper called the Bow Times. And the thing about Bow is it had no center. It was legendarily a town without a center. You know, there's a town, there was the rec center and there was the school and then there was the town offices and they were all separated from one another. That has always been a problem for Bow, and they're still trying to solve that problem. It's a problem that might be resolved if it simply had a really, really good country store, you know? And frankly, it probably will get one at some point.
Oh, do you think so?
Well, why not? You know, somebody like Amber is eventually gonna say this is what this town needs, and then nobody will be able to say Bow has no center because it will have a country store. That will, you know, automatically define the center because that's where people go together. I mean, the other center is, of course, the transfer station, you know. But
the dump, right.
But that's a different part of your life, the part where you socialize and you get the news and you feed and you know, soak in some warmth. That's the heart.
So we've talked, Rick, about the successful businesses like Amber's at the old Robie's General Store. People have mentioned local products and community feel, and that's what makes these general stores or village stores go. Some, though, have adopted a nonprofit model, not operating as for-profit businesses. So how does that work?
Right. For just that reason, people say this, you know, this must exist. So let's figure out how to do it. And a great example of that is the Canterbury Country Store, which I think it's about a decade that has been community owned. And that store has a wonderful history. I mean, it's in fact, if you'd like to hear some details on it, I have some provided by one of my best historical resources on just how the Canterbury Country Store became what it is today.
All right. And I remember stopping in there a long time ago, I think before it was bought by the nonprofit group. So
yep.
Let's pick that up after a short break, Rick.
Okay.
You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR.
I was wondering.
I'm curious to know more about.
My question is, what is a filibuster?
How does the Electoral College work?
What is required for declaring war?
A majority whip.
Congressional caucuses.
You've got questions? We've got answers. Civics 101, the shame-free podcast refresher course on how our democracy works. There is no such thing as a stupid question. So ask away and subscribe to Civics 101 on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your podcasts.
Thank you so much. Keep up the excellent work.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, reviving the old-fashioned general store in New Hampshire. Many of these have closed, but as we're hearing this morning, many are also finding new life. Tell us about your town's general store, or the one it used to have. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Our guest for the hour is Rick Broussard, editor of New Hampshire Magazine, and we've been hearing from a lot of people who are involved in reviving the country store in their town. Rick, we heard from somebody else. This is someone in Acworth who emailed to say that the town has come together as a community to keep the 1865 General Store afloat. The building is owned by the Acworth Historical Society, run by the nonprofit Acworth Community Project. So I wanted to ask you about that nonprofit model. This person says the store offers a wonderful array of staples, plus locally sourced crafts and foods. But beyond that, it's a community hub. A stone pizza oven outside offers pizza night every Saturday in summer, where people gather at picnic tables and local musicians perform. Wow, that sounds great. There are community gardens and many, many special events like music festivals, a car show, a moon dance, a harvest dinner, and so much more. You can come in for breakfast or lunch and for frequent special dinners. Everything is a fundraiser to keep the store going and an occasion to bring people together. This person says the store suffered when a bridge repair made it hard to get over the summer. By winter, it was in danger of closing, and a recent fundraiser at Town Hall featured live bands and dancing, potluck, and a silent auction. It saved the day. Wow, what a story. That makes me want to move to Acworth. It sounds great. What do you think about this nonprofit model?
Well, it's the way to go if you have a store that has to exist and that is struggling. When I was mentioning Canterbury, I mean, Canterbury store was originally called Carl Peterson's or something because it was his store. Now it is the Canterbury Country Store and Post Office, because it was more than just a country store. It was their local post office. They had to make modifications in the buildings over the years just to keep that there. So there was so much there. There was no way that Canterbury was going to let it go. So the community literally rose up to support it.
This is pretty recent, too,
right? Yeah, it's about a decade ago.
Yeah.
And but if you follow the history of that store, there was it's been so integral to the community. There was a time when they had to elevate the building to accommodate the post office, and they kept the store running while they put struts under the building, lifted it up enough. And back then, people lived in the store. So there was a time when you could watch people doing laundry through the cracks between the floor of the building and the basement. And that was all just to keep this vital center that was not – it was more than just a store. It was a post office. It was the real – it was where you did all business in Canterbury. So
that's still open and going well.
Still going well.
On a nonprofit model.
Yes.
Well, speaking of the nonprofit model and this email from Acworth about the Historical Society getting involved, we've got on the line now, Rick, Sarah Hibbard-Pyle, chair of the Francistown Historical and Improvement Society Building Committee, which is renovating the Francistown Village store and – from what I understand, is looking for somebody to operate the business there. Hi, Sarah. Thank you for being with us.
Hi.
So what role did your general store play in the community before it closed?
The village store, everything you guys have been saying is what we recognized as a community when we lost our village store. I like what Rick said about the light of the community. It is that. And Francistown has suffered, having lost our center. Our villages are vibrant because of the people coming and going, and it affects how we meet each other and how we get to know each other. It also ultimately affects our property values and the vibrancy of all of these small towns, which is really important. It's why we all live here.
Well, tell us the story of Francistown, Sarah. This is really interesting. So the store closed. It was very sad for the town. The Wall Street Journal wrote an article about the community's plight in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And then this wealthy older gentleman from Nevada reads the story. And then what happens?
We were sitting around one night, and this gentleman called. My husband is actually chair of the Historical Society, so he got a call. Apparently, Bill Smith is his name, had read the journal article, and he is just one of these wonderful people that reaches out occasionally. He has a foundation and helps community. He's interested in developing small communities. So he called, had called a couple of people in town and had been appointed to the Historical Society, and called Charlie one night and basically said, I'd really like to buy the store and donate it to the Historical Society. That's what he said. We were amazed. You get a phone call like that, and your first thought is, okay, right.
Yeah, this is a joke.
This is a prank call.
Right.
But once it became clear that this was something that was going to work, we did a lot of work. I mean, the Historical Society, of course, all historical societies have you've got a nonprofit, you've got a responsibility to your community. So we did a lot of work. We worked with the boards. We worked with this. They sat this committee. We met with the community to see what they thought their, you know, the wants and needs and the level of participation that we could count on. And we had such incredible support from our community that the Historical Society voted immediately to go forward with taking this project on.
So, Sarah, it's really interesting that you reached out to the community. What did people say they wanted from the Francistown Village Store?
You know, a lot of what we've heard so far today, the locally sourced products, a place where they could meet and talk to friends, a coffee shop. Francistown is, we laugh about the unofficial motto of the town is half an hour from everywhere. We're in the Monadnock region. We're easy. A lot of us are commuters, but it's got kind of a sense of you need to have a basis in this community. So that's what we heard. We heard we want to be able to get, you know, the staples that we need, but more important, we want to be able to get meals on our way home from work. We want to be able to get, you know, the contractors all want someplace where they can get lunch.
Right.
People that work in town. There's a large community of people who work telecommuting and that kind of stuff in Francistown too.
So you need to serve the commuters.
But I
hear you on, you know, coffee and baked goods in the morning and pick up dinner at night, but you also want to create community, and that means getting people to stick around. So how do you hope to do that, Sarah?
Well, we've looked at a lot of the models of successful stores around.
Sure.
Many of them have a hook, like a donut or a specific sandwich or something like that. And the Historical Society doesn't want to dictate what the eventual proprietor of this business is going to do. But we understand that that's something that adds to the success of a store. So as we look for a proprietor and we have a request for proposals prepared and out in, you know, to a few places in the community and available to anybody who wants it, but we will be reviewing business plans with the idea of, okay, this guy has an idea, this woman has a sense of our community, this business plan will work. And we've been running, in order to make this project work, we've been doing, fundraising like crazy. We've also been running community events, one a month. Every month we do something, whether it's a potluck casserole at night, you bring a dish or you pay us $10. Or we just finished, we had a midwinter blues fest.
Oh, that sounds good.
Fabulous.
Well, and you heard me read the email earlier from Ackworth. It sounds like they've really figured out how to make this go as a nonprofit model.
And I think the partnership of the person that's going to run this business and the Historical Society that's going to help involve the community has got a lot of chance for a whole different kind of village store. And we're very excited about it. I think.
Well, Sarah, if I could just crystal clear for the audience, clarify with you. So right now, you guys are working on improving the building. Mm-hmm. You don't have somebody to run it yet. So when do you hope to have, you know, your doors open and, you know, the coffee pot on?
We've got the reconstruction, which is extensive. You know, we're redoing all the systems in the building to make it energy efficient. We're making sure it's neat and clean, but keeping the historic feel. Of course, we are the Historic Society. So everybody calls me an idealist. I want it open this summer. I think it's a reasonable goal. But it may be late summer.
Well, summer's 3 months, so you can kind of fudge it a little bit.
Sorry?
Summer's 3 months, so you can fudge it a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's good to talk to you, Sarah. Thank you very much, and good luck.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for this program. It's been great to hear from everybody.
That is Sarah Hibbard Pyle, again, chair of the Francistown Historical and Improvement Society Building Committee, which, as we heard, is busily renovating the Francistown Village Store. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. So, Rick, another nonprofit model that isn't quite off the ground like Ackworth. I wonder what you think, as people look to revive their small towns, do you think more will be turning to this nonprofit model or trying to make it a go as a business?
I think the nonprofit model requires a lot of things that for it to happen, you know, and usually it is some sort of magic event or some necessity that brings that about, or a unique place like Roby's, where, you know, or more specifically like Canterbury Country Store, where it just can't not exist. Literally can't. You know,
can't
it's too
not
it's
have
too
it.
Critical. So they have to do it. Put it on the town warrant or whatever. So that will always be the case. But I don't think it's. I think it's up to the country stores to model themselves after what people are looking for in the in this day and age. And you know, they seem to be doing a good job of it. I mean, I think it. There will always be stores like Zeb's, you know, that are like the museum country store that represent what the country store used to be like. I mean, in a way, Trader Joe's is that. You know, you think about it. It's a place where you go and you find delightful things. Once upon a time, it was delightful to get a fudgesicle, you know, and that was the only place where you could do it. Now our delights are a little more exotic than that. So as long as those stores are providing delightful experiences and items for people, as well as necessities, there will be a market for them.
Well, a listener emailed to tell us that Califf's Country Store in Barrington is celebrating its 150th anniversary this September 7th. So that's another famous one. I think they have famous pickles, if I'm correct
cheese
on that.
Too.
Cheese. Okay.
Yes.
Chris is calling in from Keene. So let's talk to him, Rick. Chris, go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Thank you both for having me on the air.
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I just want to call in. I've been listening to the program today because I'm up in Keene visiting. I grew up in Keene, and I left here when I was 20, moved to Philadelphia, and got a business degree, had some success, you know, quite a bit of success in the area. But I really enjoy coming back here because of the general store and because of the community and visiting my hometown here in Keene. But it is sad to some degree to see the contrast between the city life and what you have up here, and also how it's starting to encroach into the communities up here. You know, for example, I might need to run out and grab a few things, and don't want to mention names, but it'll probably be a big box store just because some of those other stores don't exist the way they used to. So I guess the message is to your listeners to some degree to take advantage of those places, go out and patronize them. And another thing I want to mention that's pretty interesting is where I'm staying is on my friend's farm. He actually owns Surrey Mountain Farms. Some of your listeners may use him or have seen him.
Yeah, Chris, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up. So I do apologize for that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
last word there?
I just thought it's interesting how the communities are coming together, and he's doing that with the farming. And I just thought I would mention it because I thought the community stores in the area might like to use his produce from here,
right.
For example, the Hungry Diner up in Walpole.
Well, and Chris, I'm going to have to cut you off, and I do apologize for that. But Rick, this gets to, you know, the whole local food movement in New Hampshire seems to be a boon for country stores.
Absolutely. Everything's coming together for the country store in the 21st century, we hope.
All right. I expect to see it on the front page of the New Hampshire magazine sometime soon, although you guys did do a very nice spread a couple years back. We've got a link to that on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. Rick, thank you so much for being here.
It was a pleasure.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.